Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host. Oh, I'm glad you're with me. I'd come down with hyperhidrosis if you made me sweat about whether you'd miss today's show. Text more. Volunteer training, board work, continuing ed. You can do all these and more by texting, which has high open and engagement rates. Our 20 NTC panel explains how. They're Anne Marie Ronsman and Allie Stevens, both with CASA Child Advocates of Montgomery County, Texas. And file cleanup. Are your digital files a mess? Can't find what you know is there, and your coworkers are putting files where you think they don't belong? Julie Chu and Eileen Weissmel share their tips on organizing, creating, and maintaining clean, shared folder drives. Julie is from CARA Chicago, and Eileen is at Community Catalyst. This is also part of our 20 NTC coverage. On Tony's Take Two, a free how-to guide. We're sponsored by Wegner CPAs, guiding you beyond the numbers, wegnercpas.com, and by Turn Two Communications, PR and content for nonprofits. Your story is their mission. turn-2.co. And in a couple of weeks, we'll have a new sponsor. Here is Text More. Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of 20 NTC. That's the 2020 Nonprofit Technology Conference. The conference, of course, had to be canceled, but we are continuing, persevering virtually. We are sponsored at 20 NTC by Cougar Mountain Software. Denali Fund is their complete accounting solution made for nonprofits. Tony.ma/Cougar Mountain for a free 60-day trial. My guests on this day two coverage are Anne Marie Ronsman and Allie Stevens. They are both with CASA Child Advocates of Montgomery County, outside Houston, Texas. CASA, of course, court-appointed special advocates. Anne Marie is director of training, and Allie is marketing and communications director. Allie, Anne Marie, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Thank you.
I'm glad we were able to work this out virtually. So you've been doing a lot on your NTC topic is using text SMS to train, educate volunteers, and build community. So you've been doing a lot with text messaging for volunteers, your board. How did it get started? Did it start as an experiment and then it blew up or what? To the point now where people are asking for the messages if they don't get them. How did it get started?
Well, when I came on board a little more than 2 years ago, we had some training challenges that lots of nonprofits have, which are, you know, limited space, limited staff time. And our organization has a little bit of an upside down volunteer model. So we have a small number of paid staff and a large number of volunteers. And of course, some of those volunteers are retired, but many are working. And so it's hard to find a time that works for everybody. And then of course, space. And so we came across this technology that was being used for training in Fortune 500 companies and thought, well, awesome. Why don't we try and adapt it for our environment? And we're not sure how it would be received.
Okay. I love that you picked up something from Fortune 500, from industry, and tried it out. And so, like I said, so now people request the messages when they're not coming. If there's a lapse, they start wondering what happened to you.
Yeah. So we when we started, we were very worried that our training by text was going to be seen as an annoyance, and that, it was going to be seen negatively by our volunteers. And actually the opposite has happened. People enjoy the text, they look forward to them. Yeah. And, sometimes around the holidays or other times we have a period of time where we don't do texts for training, or sometimes we upload our list periodically and there's a glitch on our database end where people come off the list. And they send me an email and say, I'm not getting texts. Where's our training? And that's about the opposite of what we expected.
Yeah, that's fabulous. What commitment. I love it. Now, the special advocates, are they attorneys or not? Are some of your volunteers attorneys or no?
Maybe one or two, from fields outside of child welfare, but in
Texas. Not many. Okay.
Yeah, in Texas, they're all volunteers from various walks of life, which is part of what makes this training so valuable. So we have stay-at-home moms, and we have retired superintendents, and we have vice presidents from oil and gas companies, and we have teachers and the whole range. And that makes training a challenge because everybody is coming with a different skill set.
And some of what you're doing, Allie, is continuing education training, right?
Right. So our volunteers are actually required to have, Amory, is it 16 hours?
12.
12 hours of continuing education annually after they have completed their first year as an advocate. We have pre-service training that's 30 hours plus 3 hours of court observation. But then after that first year of service, advocates have to maintain 12 hours of continuing education. So that was what Amory was talking about earlier. You know, it's hard because it is mandatory and required, but in meeting their needs or our volunteers' needs, it was a definite challenge. So it was a way we thought it would benefit them in making it convenient and where they could basically watch or train at their time, their own time. Yeah. And it's worked well.
And how about the board communications? What are you using texting for there?
So that's sort of something we've just dipped our toes in, but okay. We sort of launched the advocate training first. We thought that was that was really our goal at first, was to train advocates. But then once we sort of got into that, we realized there were lots of opportunities that we could train also our board members, possibly staff, in ways that we had not done before. You know, in-person training was our primary source of training. So this was something that was experimental, and we're expanding to board training now.
Okay.
And our board members too come from a wide variety of backgrounds. And mm-hmm. so they're used to being the smartest and the best educated people in the room. And so this gives them a way to learn about the field of child welfare, while they're waiting to board a plane or sitting and waiting for a meeting. It's very convenient and, helps them to understand the work we do so that they can better help serve our organization.
And this transcends generations too. You say from Gen Z to baby boomers, right?
Yes, everybody has really enjoyed it. And again, the baby boomers were the ones that we thought would not embrace this. And they really have.
Are they some of the ones who look for the messages when they don't come?
Yes, absolutely.
I'm thinking probably more so, retirees are wondering, look, it's time for my training. Where's my...
Yes.
Well, okay, where the Gen Z is probably like, it'll come, it'll, I know I'm still in the queue, or, it'll come, okay. All right, so let's dive into some of the details. You're also doing just-in-time training, so last minute, I guess, like court decisions or things like that. I'm sorry, before we get into some of the details, what's your just-in-time training? What is that?
If we have an issue that something changes in the way either our, Department of Family and Protective Services is working, they pass a new policy, or there's a change in the way courts are working.
Okay.
Now with the coronavirus, we've been using our drip learning, our learning by text, extensively to help give our advocates the tools they need to help our kids in this remote environment that we're in.
Oh, and I neglected to say at the outset too, I know you are both well and safe, and I meant to say that earlier. I'm glad this worked out, but you're also both safe and healthy. Oh, good. Sort of breaking news, like a new policy at the state level or at a county level or something like that. Okay. All right. So let's go in. How does it work logistically? Help listeners understand, what do you need to set up? Like,
there's a technology platform you need where you advance your advanced load messages or something like that? Or how does that work?
Yes. Yeah, so we work with a company called Engage by Cell, and they are the hosting platform. And then we develop some of our own materials. So Allie and I work together and make some videos and some different documents that might be meaningful for our organization. But I also pull a lot of materials off of YouTube, off of resources from other sites, articles, research. The goal is that all of the videos or articles can be completed in 3 to 5 minutes. And, you know, really what research shows is our attention span has continued to get shorter and shorter. So we really have held fast to that time frame. And so when our advocates click, get a text, and that has a little sentence or two about what the topic is, and when they click the link, they know that within 3 to 5 minutes, the activity will be complete. And we use a whole host of different topics. What's nice about it is you can set it up, you know, seasonally if you want to. So, for example, in our field of work, the holidays are a very hard time for kids that have experienced trauma. And so giving our advocates some tips about how to help kids be successful, how to help caregivers put things in place so that, you know, they can anticipate and meet the needs of the kids in their homes.
Okay.
We also use it around back to school time. And then we also use it for our organization. So if we're putting out a new policy, it may go out in email, but it also goes out in text with learning, which we call drip learning. And our learning by text has about an 85% open rate. And as you know, email is much below that. And, so we've had a lot of success with it.
Okay. Yeah, Allie, you're marketing communications, so you're writing, I guess, a lot of the content that is already, all, you know, all the content that's developed in-house, as opposed to the content that Anne-Marie was saying she goes out and curates.
So it's a team effort. I mean, Anne-Marie and I, when we started, sort of came up with what we called buckets, so things that we thought, topics we thought would be useful, whether it was educational advocacy, medical advocacy, legal advocacy. And then we rely on a lot of our staff who specialize, have a variety of backgrounds and may specialize in sex trafficking or family, you know, toddler age children or teens. And they can kind of help us collect that content. Anne-Marie does a lot of research in digging up what, and if it doesn't exist, that's when we create it. So if it's something that's not already out there, you know, we're very small. I mean, Anne-Marie and I are essentially a team of two, and on staff total at CASA, we have about 20 paid staff members. For volunteers, we have over 300. So there's very few of us that can pull together the content for this. So we don't try to reinvent the wheel. If something already exists out there that that we like and is useful to our volunteers in terms of training, we utilize that. But if it's something that is special, something that's unique to our county or our advocates, that's when we do our own videos or our own documents or our own blog posts or whatever.
It's time for a break. Wegner CPAs, Paycheck Protection Program, loan forgiveness. It's still out there staring you down. You need to get your forgiveness application in. Wegner has a free webinar that explains PPP loan forgiveness. Go to WegnerCPAs.com, click resources and recorded events. Now back to Text More with Anne-Marie Ronsman and Allie Stevens. And it sounds like you all have a whole, production schedule is not right, but a whole schedule of when throughout the year different messages are going to be going out.
We do. When we first started, we thought we would focus on a topic, like a specific topic each month, and we still sort of do that. You know, if it's back to school, we're certainly going to be focused on back to school and effects of the disruption or the disruption of schedule or lack of schedule for kids who've experienced trauma. But really, we do a lot of, like Anne Marie said, just in time training, articles that come out. We just try to give them a variety of materials and information to consider and learn about.
Do you have any tips for writing the text message that the person actually sees before they click through to the other content?
It's tricky. I think we have, Anne Marie, it's like 140 characters.
Yes.
We've gotten really good at being succinct and trying to make it enticing, but you don't have a lot of characters.
Okay. What else? I know you have high open engagement rates. What else? What other ideas do you have for people like who are thinking, you know, this could work for their volunteer training? What other advice?
Well, one of the things that's really nice about it is that people can click the link when they have time to view it. So we have some people who click it as soon as they get it. We have some people that are sitting at their kid's soccer game on Saturday and maybe do a month's worth of texts at once. And then we pull a report on the back end. And the way that we've chosen to handle it is we give our advocates 5 minutes of continuing education credit for each, training that they do, each drip learning that they do.
And that doesn't sound like a lot. 12 hours, right?
Right. But over, it's 40 minutes a month. And so over the course of a year, it does add up. And, and then also they can use that information. They can pass it along to placements where the kids are placed. If they have a resource that, video that they found helpful that they think might be helpful to a foster parent, they can pass that along to them. And although our organization is small and we haven't used it a lot for training for employees, in a larger nonprofit that has a larger group of staff members, would work equally well. I'm not particularly techie. It's pretty intuitive to use, pretty logical. And, Allie, I find the content and Allie, makes it pretty. And, it really just has worked out well for us. And it's a very cost-effective, tool. Yep. But also I can sit down, for a day or a day and a half and do all of our content for a month or 6 weeks. Part of that is also finding the content.
Right. Okay. Allie, can you talk to some of the costs? I know, I think you both said it's cost effective. How do you pay by the message or is it a standard rate for the year with a cap on number of messages or unlimited? Or how does that work?
So we do have an annual, there is an annual fee and we are allotted a certain amount of text messages. We actually use, the majority of our texts go out and are used for Train by Cell. Engage by Cell is the platform and then they have two kind of sub platforms, Train by Cell and also Give by Cell. So we actually do use it also for development, so fundraising. It's a very small, we started it as Train by Cell. We started the Train by Cell technology, and then we've done it for a couple of Giving Tuesday and our own fundraising campaign. So we're just, that last year was our first year doing that as well. So we do use it for that as well. But I think we just did the math on this, or our executive director did, and I think it's about 6 cents per text message. Is that right, Anne Marie?
I didn't see what her math ended up coming back, but basically what you do is you buy a certain amount of text messages and Train by Cell has been really good at giving us a nonprofit rate and which is, I believe, to be much below, what they charge in. We buy one bucket and some of those are used for fundraising, a smaller amount in our organization, and the rest are used for training.
Yeah. Okay. I know you've both said it's cost effective. What else?
And we're sending out 2 texts a week.
Okay. So. Oh yeah, that's right. Thank you. You reminded me where I wanted to go. You said 40 minutes a month. Mm-hmm. So, and it's 5 minutes, right? So that sounds like 8 messages per month, twice a week. Okay.
Right. We wanted it to be, you know, enough to keep people engaged, but not so much that it became an annoyance. Mm-hmm. And we generally send the texts out between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. And usually Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday.
Have you tested different times of day and different days? And then you
That was actually the information that Train by Cell gave us as far as the best times for people to open texts.
And okay. That's 10 to 2 and Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Correct.
Yep.
Okay. I mean, we don't have to wrap it up. I'll throw it up to either of you. But we can if you feel like we've covered it. Anything either of you wanna add?
I think one of the other things that has been interesting about this technology is how it has really built a virtual community. you know, that wasn't our intent. It actually wasn't even on. You know, really when you have advocates are all working individually. They work with individual kids or an individual family of kids. Mm-hmm. To the placements. And so a lot of the work that we do is kind of in isolation that our volunteers do. And so, you know, they're all getting this same article. And so when they run into each other in the office, they can say, hey, you know, did you see that article about whatever? And so it's been a really good community building tool. And which was an unexpected benefit.
Okay. We're going to leave it there then. Sound all right?
Okay.
All right. All right. From court-appointed special advocates, child advocates of Montgomery County outside Houston, Texas, Anne-Marie Ronsman, Director of Training, and Ali Stevens, Marketing and Communications Director. Thanks so much for sharing, and please stay safe.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. And thank you for being with Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of 20 NTC virtually. We're sponsored by Cougar Mountain Software. The Denali Fund is their complete accounting solution made for nonprofits. Tony.ma/Cougar Mountain for a free 60-day trial. Thanks so much for being with us. It's time for Tony's Take Two. Unleash the game-changing power of planned giving at your nonprofit. That's my free how-to guide to help you get started in planned giving. Get your program started. It will help you decide if you're ready for planned giving. If you're not ready, of course, you can stop right there. You don't have to read any further. If you are, like most are, it'll show you how to promote your new program and give you strategies for stewardship of your new planned gift donors. How do you get the guide? You text guide to 56525. We're texting more today. Remember, text more. Text guide to 56525. That is Tony's Take Two. Now it's time for file cleanup. Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of 20 NTC. That's the 2020 Nonprofit Technology Conference. We're sponsored at 20 NTC by Cougar Mountain Software. My guest today, kicking off day three of what would have been the conference, are Julie Chu and Eileen Weissmel. Julie is the Quality and Standards Manager at CARA Chicago, and Eileen is Knowledge and Data Manager at Community Catalyst. Good morning, Eileen. Julie, welcome.
Morning.
Thank you.
Morning.
Your workshop topic is From Chaos to Clarity, Practical Strategies for File Cleanup. Eileen, let's start with you. Why is this, it sounds daunting, it sounds dull. Why should we motivate us? Why should we be paying attention to our shared files?
Yes, anything but dull for okay. those of us working. Hope,
all right, well, good, we'll make it interesting.
But,
okay. On the surface, it sounds dull. All right.
For us, we were doing it in preparation from a move from our local server to a cloud-based file system. And we were moving partially because we needed the better technology, but also people could not find things. There were multiple drafts, people even using the very limited search function of with our local server system, People would search for things, find multiple copies, not know which is the right one. People were storing things in email attachments. There was no central way to have our information accessible to everybody. And so it was critical for us to do our work and move forward to both clean up our files, which was actually a first step to get a folder, to clean up our folder structure, and then to go through our files and really get rid of things that we didn't need, organize the things we did need, so make sure that people could get their hands on what they needed in a timely way and get about the business of doing their work.
Yeah, you want to be able to... I'm not going to pick that up. Sorry. This is what happens, working from home with multiple lines. It'll stop eventually. People need to be able to go to their directory and get what they need quickly, not wondering whether we've got the right file or the right draft, et cetera. Yeah, of course. Julie, how did this come up for Kara, Chicago?
Yeah, so our story is a little bit different from Eileen's, but we did have, we originally were using a file server and it became crowded with just over 20 years worth of files. So we had a top folder structure that had over 100 folders and all of them were accessible by anybody in the organization, even though things like performance reviews and personal files were stored in those folders. Yeah. So they kind of had they carried the legacy of how the organization had transformed over the decades, really. So you would see all department named files in the top level folders. And so we decided a couple of years ago that we needed to do exactly what Eileen was saying. We needed to make sure that staff were able to access the files that they needed quickly. And things like organizational or enterprise resources, like the organizational map or our master calendar, weren't buried in nested folders. So we did that, and we basically looked at what each team was using currently and moved those folders, those files only, over to a new file server. So we're in a different file server. We didn't move to the cloud like Eileen's organization did. We plan to do that in the future, but at this point, we're using another clean folder structure in a new, different file server.
I want you both to know that I am sympathetic to this. I'm very scrupulous about creating top-level folders. Like that, for it to be a brand new category, or it's a high threshold for me. But when I'm at a client, using a directory that I have access to, or when I'm just organizing my own folders, I can't. My own folders, including my consulting, I can't think of the last time I created a top level folder. So I'm scrupulous about that. I'm sure it doesn't carry down to the level that the two of you are involved in, but at least at the top level, I don't think every new activity requires a new folder, for the month or the day or something so yeah. I'm at least cautious about that, the top level.
We like to hear that.
All right, thank you. All right. So I'm trainable. But I know it goes much deeper than that. I know we will too. All right, so I guess, I don't know, is a fair place to start? Like, how do you get your arms around this project? Like, who should be involved? Is it all the users, or just a representative from each team or something? How do you get the project, the reorganization kicked off? Julie, let's start with you.
Yeah, that's a great question, and that was actually going to be the main focus of our session. So at both of our organizations, we ended up meeting with departments, with individual departments. Before we met with those teams, though, we had to ask each team and work with each team to ask them to do some prep work. So Aileen maybe could give a little bit more information about that, because I really admire the way that she kind of galvanized each team to do that work. For my organization, I basically gave them a template, a spreadsheet, and asked them to inventory the things that they actually use on a regular basis. And I feel like that was really tedious work for the organization or the departments. But I think it really got them to think about the importance and the value of each of the things that they use and save on the file server. So that really just gave people a kind of perspective of what they needed to bring with them into the new file server. So after they did that, I would meet and I would organize those meetings with each team to line by line go through that spreadsheet and to talk about whether or not there were duplicates of each item, and sometimes there were, and sometimes people did not know that they were working off of the same file but saved in different locations, so things like that kind of surfaced. So meeting with each team was definitely essential even after they did that initial inventory, because I found that teams weren't talking about those things. They needed somebody from the data and tech team to kind of organize them and kind of organize that conversation. So I feel like, you know, my work and as well as Aileen's work in this project was really, the importance of it was really to organize those conversations because they were not happening.
All right. Aileen, before we go to you on the same question, you know, how to get started, I just want to ask Julie, that spreadsheet, did that go down to the file level? So it was hierarchically organized spreadsheet?
Yeah, sometimes they actually did go down to the file level. Most of the time, most departments had just so many individual files that we ended up just talking about folders, which is fine too. Which was fine too. We would just have to revisit individual files once we moved things over to the new file server, just to make sure that we were truly keeping only the things that we really needed and not some spreadsheet that was really important, you know, a year or two ago, but not no longer important.
Yeah. Plus people keeping old mail mail merges. Mail merge
oh,
file.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Mail merges, file labels.
Exactly. Envelope files. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Aileen, how about you? Where, how did you kick this off? Help listeners understand how to get started with a project like this.
And I do have to say that part of I modeled our way of doing it on Julie's. I had put a query out to the N10 listserv as far as file cleanup. Julie responded, and so we actually, this idea of working by program, I took from Julie. We completely modeled.
Oh, Julie. Okay, Julie, is that why you say you admire Eileen's work, because she copied yours?
I think Aileen took what we did and just made it 10 times better. So true admiration.
Okay.
Mutual, yes.
Time for our last break. Turn to communications, relationships. The world runs on them. We know this. Turn 2 is led by former journalists, so you get help building relationships with journalists. Those relationships will help you when you need to be heard so that people know you're a thought leader in your field. Turn 2 specializes in working with nonprofits. They're at turn-2.co. We've got buttloads more time for file cleanup.
Really hard to imagine sending people off to their corners and telling them just to clean. I could not imagine that happening. And it's been tried before. And so this whole idea of doing it in groups, which there were some, you know, some higher ups that were naysayers that said, you know, why don't you just have people clean? But the managers overall were so grateful that I was scheduling these 3-hour slots, which seemed impossible. Like I thought there's no way they would do it. They were very excited, believe it or not, excited about having these 3-hour slots to sit with their team, because they said they would never do it and it has to be done. And so it was both great for getting the work done, but also for getting staff excited about the project and able to see the value of it and to be a part of the solution later on. And so the prep work, which Julie had mentioned that I did, I didn't do the inventory, but I had an email went out to managers encouraging people to do some prep work before the 3-hour meetings. And so I created what I called the vault, which I described to people as a storage unit in another state that you need special permission to get into. So what it was is a place that for people who didn't want to delete things, it's like, you don't have to delete it, just put it in the vault, you know? So it's like, it's something that they really don't need, but they can't let go of. So we put it in the vault, keep it out of the way. Right. Now that's different. For some where they said, we need a historic archive because we sometimes need to refer it. It's like, keep that. Don't put that in the vault because you need that. So there's difference between an active archive of the history of a program and the vault, which is essentially one step removed from deletion. And so I asked people to, you know, I could create a vault folder and start moving things in. I gave them just, simple things, just so it wouldn't be overwhelmed. Look for drafts, you know, to get rid of drafts. I actually should have refreshed my memory of what the other ones were, but also, you know, looking for folders where there might be just one file to get rid of. And so I just gave them a little bit of prep work, and then that most of them did. And then wonderfully, one of our senior managers, who was part of that, wrote a follow-up to say that their session was incredibly successful because of the prep work. And so that encouraged others to do the prep work too.
And then what did you do in these 3-hour meetings with them?
So we did it, they were all a little different, interestingly. We had a template, and we actually, unlike Julie, did these herself, and I had a consultant to facilitate these. And depending on the program, they went different. So basically, we would go through, in the best case scenarios, go through just systematically, folder by folder by folder.
Okay.
But in the prep work, sometimes they would write delete with discussion. And so we'd go through those two. It's like some that people had already identified we might be able to delete. And we really literally deleted them in real time or moved them to a vault in real time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. How about the organization? So we've talked so far about what files may be needed or not needed actively or needed as a vault file. But how about the folder structure, the hierarchical structure? Is there people competing around that? Is it difficult to reorganize? People are used to going to a certain nested folder and finding what they need, and now it's going to be a different name and a different hierarchy. Is that trouble?
Well, it hasn't been. We had a folder structure working group. So it was about a cross-organizational group, about 5 people who we felt, I identified them based on that they could see the forest and the trees. That's what we needed. Systems people who also, you know, strategy people, but knew what was important from a systems level. And working with the same consultant, and we started looking at the existing one. She had done a lot of discovery to find out what the organizational needs are. And then we started just moving pieces around until we got a structure that reflected the way we do our work. And so by the time this working group was done, because they're cross-organizational and because they were taking this to their teams, when we released this structure, people were very relieved for the most part. There's always resistors, you know, and Julie
sure.
and I.
Well, there's always outliers. Yeah, yeah.
Or people who were, you know, if not resistors, people who were slower to accept it. Okay. And so, yeah.
But recalcitrants. I like to call them recalcitrants.
Mm-hmm. But, there you go.
but they, you have to try to bring them along. Julie, let me ask you about something that Eileen alluded to and that wasn't a problem for her. About leadership buy-in for the time that this is going to take? Was that, how did that go for you? Or do you have advice about it?
Basically
making the case for why this is valuable so that your leadership supports it.
I'm really glad that you asked that because we ended up, my manager and I ended up talking about how to get leadership on board. We prepared like a 20-minute presentation and a leadership team meeting. It only took 20 minutes to actually do. We kind of expected, like Eileen was saying, some resistance at that level, just because this is a file cleanup project and we were proposing that this would take like a year. And we went into the leadership team meeting thinking, you know, just prepared for the worst, we went through with it, and they were actually very, very enthusiastic about it. We were expecting, at the worst, just resistance to the timeline, at least, or, just plain, ambivalence about it. But people were actually very enthusiastic because it impacts daily routines. We actually also did a pre-survey leading up to that leadership team meeting just to ask staff how long they're actually spending searching for files, what they would want in a new folder structure, things like that. And we took those results to that leadership team meeting, put in the presentation, and from that survey, we found that people were spending upwards of 3 hours each week searching for items on the shared drive.
Oh, that'll help make the case.
Exactly.
Three hours? When you aggregate the time over a week, 3 hours looking for the right files?
Looking for items. And so we used to say that, that would mean that overall about one full-time worker's time was actually spent each month. Looking for files. So that was a really, hard-hitting kind of figure that we used for the leadership team meeting to really illustrate how much time was being lost doing this day-to-day work. Okay. So that really, really proved the case. And we started at that leadership team level, presented the plan to do the team-by-team meeting, also asked that they support the prep work that each team would have to do, and they were very, very enthusiastic about that after hearing that. Yeah.
Okay. So you both had management enthusiasm. Yeah. Yeah.
I would say so. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So we still have some time together. If there's more that we haven't covered that you think is important for listeners who might take this on, either of you, is where should we go from here, or? Anything? Have we covered it? Have we exhausted the topic?
I think the only thing is just that for people who think that it sounds, back to the beginning of it sounding dry, that if it's phrased as is what Julie was talking about, is just so critical to the work, that it's not a administrative task. It's really a programmatic, strategic piece of work that means that people can focus on what they're doing versus looking for things, which is no small thing when, nonprofits are strapped and need to really make the most of their time and their resources.
Yeah. All right. We'll leave it there then. You want to be able to find what you need quickly, a couple of clicks and you should be there. All right. Thank you very much. That's Eileen Weissmel, knowledge and database. I did that first time too. Knowledge and data manager. A community catalyst in near Providence, Rhode Island. And Julie Chu is quality and standards manager at CARA Chicago. Eileen, Julie, thank you very much. Thanks so much for sharing.
Thank you,
Tony.
Stay well. And thank you for being with Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of 20 NTC. We're sponsored by Cougar Mountain Software. Thanks so much for being with us. Next week, I'll have more from 20 NTC. If you missed any part of today's show, I beseech you, find it on TonyMartinetti.com. You hear that vacuuming in the background? Got a little work going on, and they clean up very well before they depart. I appreciate that. So we persevere. We're sponsored by Wegner CPAs, guiding you beyond the numbers, WegnerCPAs.com. Can you hear me? And by Turn 2 Communications, PR and content for nonprofits. Your story is their mission. Turn-2.co. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. The show's social media is by Susan Chavez. Mark Silverman is our web guy. And this music is by Scott Stein. Yeah! Be with me next week for Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.